Today is Tuesday, October 30th. I am H.F. Williamson. I am interviewing Albert Hellriegel for the Veterans History Project of the Library of Congress American Folklife Center. We are at Studio X, Campbell Hall, Urbana, Illinois. Henry Radcliffe is the Director of Lighting, Sound, and Camera. I'd like you to start by telling us where you were before you went into service and how you came to join.
I was in Sandwich, Illinois, and this year was in 1941. I went into service at 31st of March. I went into Sycamore. Just one guy went in. My order number was 97. We went into Sycamore. From there, we went into Chicago, Fort Sheridan. And we stayed in there about a day or two, and then we went to Camp Grant. Then we went from Camp Grant to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Okay. I didn't stay there too long. I had nosebleed every day, and I went in the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
So I didn't get too much awkward training. So then I stayed there. I was there about 2 or 3 months at Fort Bragg. We had sand every day. We even had sand in our food. and then we come back. I come back to Camp Forest, Tennessee, at the 33rd Division. That was a National Guard outfit.
So Fort Bragg was where you did your basic training?
Fort Bragg, I done my basic training at Fort Bragg.
And then you went to
Tennessee. But I didn't get too much done because I was in the hospital with nosebleed.
Oh, my.
And then they burnt out my nose, and I got better. And then when I come back to Camp Forest, Tennessee, they give me a little more training, you know, foot training and stuff. And we was there then till the war broke out in 1941, December the 7th. And then we went to New York to get on a ship.
Now, where did you train? Did you do any artillery training in the United States?
Yeah, we had 155 howitzers. We'd go out. We went on maneuvers in 41. We was gone one whole summer down to Arkansas and Louisiana. We wasn't in camp. We went on maneuvers, and I was with the whole outfit. The whole outfit went.
So this was a large war game.
War games. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we fired the guns and everything in 155 howitzers. That's all they had then, because they were World War One artillery guns, and that's all we had then. And then we come back off maneuvers, and then war broke out December the 7th of 41, you know, in Jefferson, Pearl Harbor. 2 weeks we had headed for overseas.
Wow.
We had 32 ships in the convoy. We went through
this was coming out of New York, you said?
Yeah, we went through the Panama Canal. It took us quite a while to get through there, that new ship. No aircraft carriers or no battleships, just a troop ship. I had 5,000 on my ship, and there's 5,000 on another. We got into a storm. Neither one of them took water over the bow, and we come out of it. All the other ships, they took water over the bow. We run into a big storm. All the lead pipes started breaking, and all the water started to flow all over.
Oh,
and then we had a great big hole full of potatoes. We got down the Caribbean. They started to rot, so they had to shovel all them out. It smelled so bad. And then we got in Australia. It took us a whole month to go over.
So you went straight across to
Australia? No, we zigged and zagged.
Yeah, but you went...
We went straight to Australia. And we got over there while the tide was out, we couldn't go in. We had to wait till the tide come in. The big ships drove so much water that they couldn't get in. So the guys, they'd grease up and go out through the portholes. Some of them we never found.
What?
No, they never come back.
Holy cow.
They grease up. You couldn't get through. It was too big, you couldn't get through. Them girls would come out there, hardly nothing on, little sailboats at night, and pick up them guys.
Huh.
And they wanted to see the American soldiers.
Oh my gosh!
We stayed there about a week or two. We lived right in there. We lived right in the houses where the people lived, and they had little 5 gallon buckets for a toilet out and back. And a guy'd come around every morning, dump them, and come back. We slept on the porch, two guys, and we was all together. We'd go out and march every day on the street, you know. Well, I think we was there about a week or two. Then we went back to New Caledonia, no guns. We waited there 6 weeks on New Caledonia, that's French Island. That was back about 500 or 600 miles from Australia, north. And we stayed there, I think we stayed there right around 6 months before we got the guns. And then in November, we went into Guadalcanal, where we fought.
While you were at New Caledonia, was there any concern that the Japanese invasion might be coming close?
No, they were bombing Australia when we got in Australia. They were bombing Darwin already then, but they never got any farther. And then we got in New Caledonia, we finally did get our new guns 6 months later. Then we went into Guadalcanal.
How long did you have time to train on the guns before you went to Guadalcanal?
Hardly any at all.
Really?
No, just a few weeks, that's all. And then we went into action right away. I remember when you got off the ship, you had to went in clear to your waist. You know, the PD boats only take you in so far, and you had to wade the rest way in water.
So the artillery came in how long after the first invasion forces went on the island?
Well, the 1st Marine Division was there first. They had artillery and all their guns and everything then. They had dead Japs laying every place when we got there. But they was glad to see us. 32,000 guys moved in, Mercal Division.
Right.
They come from New Caledonia.
You want to tell us a little bit about the makeup of the Mercal Division?
The Mercal Division was made up of the 33rd Division from Camp Forest, Tennessee. There was all different outfits in it, and they just made one big division out of it. But the guys were from all over the United States. They were from Chicago and East St. Louis, Rock Island, Moline, every place.
Were there some foreigners in the division too?
They was from all over. All the guys were.
Were there people from other countries too?
No, just
Americans.
Yeah,
okay.
But we had, when we got there then, well, we had Australian troops there too.
Okay.
And they'd go out and scout, and they knowed right where them Japs was. They was real good at that. They'd go out on patrol, and they'd radio back where they was, and then we'd zero in with the artillery, you know. And we'd put out 3 rounds in 6 seconds.
Wow.
And they thought we had automatic artillery. You know, 12 guns firing that much.
Right.
And we went one gun, the one gun I was on, we burnt the rifling out in it. And the shell won't go off till it goes through the shell gun. It's got to rotate so many times. And one time we were firing, and this guy, he missed the breech, and I had it open, but I didn't close it, and it fell on the ground. It was a timed shell. The minute that went out through the tube, it went off. Because, see, it was timed.
Right.
And it hit the ground, it hit the metal, and I thought then it won't go off though till it goes through the gun. And it hadn't got out over, I don't think it got out over 100 feet and it went off.
Oh, no.
It was a time shell. And they was timed for about 30, 40 feet above the ground.
So
it just mowed everything off, see.
So you had the group had a battery of 12 of these?
Yeah, that was a battalion.
Battalion had 12 of those.
12 guns.
And you were supporting the frontline troops?
I was in a number C. I was the second gun in the second in battery.
Okay.
Battery C, I was the second gun. My gun always fired first.
All right.
Yeah, I always fired first.
So they knew how to range in?
Well, we must have fought them for about a month, though, before we secured it. About a whole month we fought there.
But who? Were you supporting the troops up in front?
Infantry troops ahead, yeah. They with the Mercal Division.
How often did you have to change your positions?
Well, we moved ahead one night, and we moved ahead of the infantry, and there was mortar shelling us, so we got out there in a hurry. You know,
yes.
We just moved ahead too fast. But we was always right behind the infantry. I don't imagine over a couple hundred yards right behind the infantry.
Right.
Yeah. We never fought any hand-to-hand fighting with the Japs. But you had to stand guard at night, you know, because a lot of times you didn't get formation after night because the Japs, they didn't attack too much after night. No, they stayed in their group, you know. And
so how long were you on Guadalcanal?
I was there that fall till I got a hernia, and then I left and went to New Hebrides. I was with the Navy for 21 days.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We fought there about 4 or 5 months, anyhow, at least that. We'd change positions all the time.
Right.
Yeah, there all the time on Guadalcanal. That was the first island we took back, the first island we took back.
Then
I got evacuated. I went out one night and lifted on the trail. Nobody'd get up. And I went out and lifted on the trail, and I had a hernia. It went down in my sack below on one side. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. And so I was with the Navy for 21 days. Then I was New Hebrides. I got operated on, then I went to New Zealand. The solar ship come out, it was all white. Had a great big red cross on it. I was down there about 6 weeks. And then I went from there, come back there to get back to New Caledonia again to get my outfit. They was on Fiji before we went into Bougainville.
You were able to join the same outfit?
Yeah, I'd like to get back my own outfit.
Did that always happen when you got injured?
No. When I come back from New Zealand, I got an attack of malaria again, and I had everything was just yellow too, and I got 47 letters one day there, and then I went to the lieutenant and everything. I had a terrible time getting back because he didn't want to transfer me. He wanted to keep me, and they was going to go to the Philippines.
Oh.
So I kept on him. So when I got back, they didn't give me a job, just running this big generator and the lights. And then it wasn't when I got there. Half of them was in Fiji. They was in the hospital of malaria.
Oh.
Reattack, see?
Right.
Yeah, reattack. And then we went in there, I think, just right after Christmas. We went into Bougainville.
So now you're back with your original
I'm back with my outfit.
That's nice.
Same gun crew and everything.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Nobody got killed while I was gone.
Right.
They didn't stay on Guadalcanal too long after I left. It was pretty well secured. But when we went to Bougainville, We didn't fight there too much. I got the pick to come home. I had malaria and had hepatitis, and I had a hernia that broke again. And I got to come home. My 250 guys, they didn't like me too much when I left. They didn't like to see me leave.
Oh.
I don't know who they. Then they left after
they thought
I.
You were getting off easy.
Yeah, or? This was getting late. This was getting late, and when they hit the beach in Normandy, I was coming home. Could you remember what year that was? 44.
44.
I was coming home then. I come home on a Liberty ship. I went back from Bougainville to New Cal. I mean, to Guadalcanal again. Stopped off there and picked up some more troops to bring home. They wasn't fit for action no more. Some of them had their hands shot off or their legs shot off, you know. And we picked up some there, and we come straight home. We come right straight to the Panama Canal again. Come back through there, and I was on guard all the way back. That's the only time I never did get sick. I was on about six different ships. I never did get sick. And they thought I was, I had more MP man, you know, my arm. They thought I was Marine then, you know, the guy. We picked up 6,000 troops down at Panama. They was there all during the diversion, you know, and they come back. And then we come back to New Orleans, come up the Mississippi River, and that paddle was just kicking out mud and dirt like that.
Oh.
I didn't go out and celebrate that night because I knew I was going home.
Okay.
And that was the end of my tour of duty. On that.
So that you were.
Then I went out after I was down to San Antonio, Texas. I went out to Camp Groomer, Oklahoma. That was a big Army base there. Camp Groomer, Oklahoma. Fort Sill was a big place too.
I know Fort Sill. Yeah.
You probably know a bit. Well, I went out to Camp Groomer, fired a great big, oh, that shell must have been that long, a 200-millimeter howitzer. They knew I was in the service, and they knew I was a number one man, so they put me at the gun. All the other guys went way back by the logs and laid down. It set me on fire, blew my helmet off, blew my earplugs out, my whole clothes on fire. I should put in for medical discharge, but it didn't, but I'd finally come out of it. I thought it was killed me at first. That backflash come back, all by fire, you know. Stringed my hair, my eyebrows, everything.
Why didn't they warn you about
that? Yeah, they didn't. They put in the wrong powder charge for the gun.
Oh.
They never fired it no more. 200 millimeter.
Yeah.
So then that Christmas, the guys, the outfit that I was with, they was going to go to occupation over in Italy then. They was going to go to occupation there. I said, shoot, I ain't going to. He said, go home and drink a little whiskey and beer and you'll come down with malaria. I turned in the 105 temperature. And then they sent me. Yeah, malaria again. So then I went down to the 8th Service Command down Monticello, Arkansas. They had prisoners down there. First they had 8,000 racks, 7,000 whacks there. The farmers weren't going home at night, so they got rid of them. They got in all the Italian prisoners. We had 7,000 and about 500 German pilots. They were there. They knew what I was German descent. They used to cut my hair for nothing. I didn't have to pay nothing, but they was good cooks. The Italians, they put a lot of grease in theirs.
So were
the 8th Service Command, I stayed there till I got discharged.
So this was the 8th Service Command the group responsible for?
Well, no, it was just a camp for prisoners.
Right, and you were responsible for the camp?
Yeah, they were short of soap, you know, in Italy. So they had a board down in the bottom of the barracks. They didn't know how they were getting rid of all that soap. They had three or four bushel baskets of soap down there you wore his face with. And they was going to take that back to Italy when they went.
Okay.
But I would take them out and cut pulpwood, you know, in the daytime. Two of them would take a whole loaf of bread and just break it in two and eat it. They'd bring it out. I'd lose two or three of them. They said they'd be back tomorrow. We're just going to visit some ladies out in the woods. I didn't want to use ammunition on them. So I told them when I reported, said they'll be back in the morning. I come back in the morning and they were there. We cut that pulpwood, you know, for paper.
Right.
Uh-huh. And I stayed there. I must have been there two or three months down there. And then
on
I got
duty.
Yeah, duty. I wore MP Bantam warm all the time. And I was the youngest one there. The other guys are all older.
Well, by now the war was almost over.
Well, yeah, it was almost over, 45.
So these troops were pretty
year 40.
The prisoners were pretty much resigned to their fate.
I guess they were ready to get them sent back, see?
Right.
So I had 85 points, so I got out.
Oh.
And that was it. So that was the end of it.
Okay.
And I got out in June the 9th of 1945. I was in 4 years, 2 months, and 8 days. 4 years, 2 months, and 8 days. That's what I was in altogether. I went in with $21 a month, and after my clothing was taken out, laundry, and my insurance, $10,000 insured everybody, well, I got $15 a month. And then I got PFC, because I was in the outfit, you know, with National Guard. They was all had seniority over me. And PFC, I got 65 when I retired. Then I got a little pension when I got out. I think it was $200 or $300.
Right.
Muster not pay.
Right.
And that was the end.
How did you come to enlist before Pearl Harbor? In the peacetime, what was the peacetime Army?
My order number, I was 21 years old in September, and then that was 1940.
Right.
And in March of 41, my order number come up 97, and in the Army I went. I was working for a guy, a hard man, on a farm.
Oh.
They said that wasn't necessary, so I had to go anyhow. I was just 21.
So the order number is what we would call
97.
Was what we call a draft number?
Yeah,
now?
Draft number. Okay. That's right. Yeah, yeah. So I was just 90.
So the draft was in effect then?
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, it was in
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. There's two colored guys ahead of me. They wasn't going to go in. They had gonorrhea, and they wasn't going to go in. They gave them penicillin shot, and they was back in there in 2 days.
Oh, okay.
But we went all the way. We went with Critical Camp Grant then after we left Fort Sheridan when we went in. But the guy I went in with, just one, I and him went into Sycamore. That was the county seat of DeKalb County. And I worked up there about 4 years before I went in. This March will be 70 years. You can buy 8 gallons of gas for a dollar.
Not anymore.
Yeah. And then we went in there. We had corned beef and cabbage all the way to Fort Bragg on the train. I looked out the window one time and I couldn't see the end of the ground. There's five engines on the train, troop train.
Oh.
It took us 2 days and two nights to get there from Camp Grant.
Wow.
Yeah. That's when I went in.
Well, sometimes do you think back about the fact that you came from a small town and all the parts of the world you've seen?
Yeah. Australia, New Zealand. But what they had over there when we first got over there, they didn't have no camp or nothing for you.
That's
we
right.
slept out in the park on the ground.
Right.
And then they brought us into town about 40 miles from Melbourne. They brought us into town. We lived right in with the families.
Yeah.
I was pretty lucky. We had the guy had three daughters. Well, oh. We went in, and they had us out in the porch, just two guys.
Okay.
They'd serve you breakfast in bed.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. They never had no running water or nothing.
There's no army base like that anywhere else, I can
no,
say
they
that.
No, they didn't have nothing like that then yet. No, they was
How pretty, come they hadn't? They just weren't ready for the troops to arrive to be trained.
They just wasn't ready for nothing.
This was so early.
Yeah, to come quick, see.
Yeah.
You take 32,000 guys coming in just overnight, you know, that's a lot of guys. We'd go out every morning, they'd make us train on the street out right. there, you know, march and stuff. You couldn't stay in bed all day. No.
When did they eventually build a base there for
Well,
later?
I don't know what they done.
Okay.
The Japs, they quit after the Marines landed on Guadalcanal, they quit bombing then right away, see. And they run out of ammunition. I mean, they run out of planes, and they run out of ammunition. They run out of food and everything there.
Right.
They just kind of, you know, the island, they just put ships all around, and they couldn't get no supplies in. They just had so much more. They had battles there that lasted all night.
Right.
Yeah, all over.
How did, going back again to your early training, mm-hmm. how is it you were ended up in the artillery as opposed to maybe the infantry?
Well, when I went in Fort Sheridan, they just cut me off. The ones back of them went in the artillery, and the ones in front went in the infantry.
It was that random?
Yeah, that close. And that's when they examined you. You never had a stitch of clothes on.
Right.
And the two colored guys in front of me, and they had venereal disease, and they thought they'd get out, but they didn't.
Right, you told
They
us
went
that.
In the infantry,
right.
And right back of me, I went in the artillery. All the guys right back of me went in the artillery.
That was a lucky draw.
Yeah, it was. So we'd go out and train, though. We'd go out and train down in Camp Forest, Tennessee. All the barracks were wood. They had to get so much rain down there, they had mats to walk on to keep out of the clay and mud. And then when I come to Fort Bragg, that's a national place, you know, permanent buildings there.
Right.
You couldn't see one guy from the end of the barracks to the other in the sandstorm. It was that bad.
Oh.
And you'd finish, you know, you'd finish, you'd have sand in that.
Right,
and,
you were telling us.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But I didn't stay there too long. I had nosebleed about every day, and then they burnt my nose out, and that helped me a little.
Okay.
They still done it overseas too a little, but I finally got rid of that. They said the blood vessels were too close to the surface, and I had asthma too a little, and I'd sneeze a lot.
But that didn't keep you out of the service.
No, it didn't keep me. No.
That wasn't going to keep you out.
No.
So it was almost the luck of the draw. I mean, mm-hmm. the artillery.
But when I was with the Navy, though, they treated me real good. We had beans for breakfast, noon, and supper. But they treated me real good.
Okay.
We had all English, I mean, we had all American nurses in New Zealand, too. They had a permanent hospital there,
all
right. Very big brick building. The soil down there, it's all up and downhill like that. It's real rough, real rough. I don't know what they feed off of or what they eat off of. I was in Auckland, New Zealand. I was there about 6 weeks, about a month and a half.
Right.
Yeah. They'd take me out every morning, you know, make me march a little bit. I took care of a guy. He had a ruptured appendix, and they didn't get it right away, and he had gangrene inside. Ooh. So I'd carry this basin of infection stuff with the nurse. I said, I don't believe I can stand it. 2 days he died. They didn't get it all, you know, inside. His timex busted, and he got gangrene. He's about 20, 21 years old, and he died.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Well, God, we got along pretty good, though. They'd get you up every day, though, and try to make you exercise, but I was so sore yet, and I couldn't bring
it. You thought you were too sore.
Yeah.
They probably thought you could exercise.
No, I still had the stitches in
you. Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah.
They want to keep you moving.
Yeah, I know it. They never let you sit still on there.
Well, when you talk to youngsters that you know or nephew, what are the most memorable things that you want to make sure they know about from your four years or more in the service during World War II? What do you think back on?
The 18-year-olds come over, and they didn't know enough to lay in the center of the cot, you know, with the mosquito bar around. And it just looked like a bunch of buckshots hit them. They'd lay out next to the mosquito bar. 3 days they were down with malaria. No matter if they took that Adabrin or not, didn't make any difference. They just got bit so much, you know, at night. They'd lay out next to that mosquito bar, and the mosquito just bit them at night. I slept underneath one of them for 32 months. And you had to know how to lay her, they'd bite you.
Oh, my gosh.
At night, just a female mosquito gave you malaria.
Right.
Yeah. We got to get re-emplacements in, you know. Guys got sick, or like a guy drove in, hit the coral rock and died. Split his head open.
Oh, no.
And, you know, you lose men, and we got replaced 18, 19-year-olds. But truth, they didn't know nothing about the mosquitoes. They didn't know enough to lay in the center of that cot.
Nobody trained them, huh?
You know, if you didn't lay in the center of that cot, they'd just bite you all night. And they had a problem about that long.
What?
Yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah, the prong on them was that long.
Oh, no, that must be exaggerated.
No, they was monsters. But on New Caledonia now, they never had the malaria mosquitoes there. They'd stay outside of the night, and they'd burn cow manure. And that cow manure, the smoke from that cow manure would keep them away.
Oh.
But they wasn't malaria.
Okay.
And they had all kind of fruit there. They had oranges, and they had real beautiful, these great big, you know, what they call grapefruits.
Okay.
They had them, and then they had these ones grow out in little bushes, you know, on the ground. They're real full of needles. Pineapples.
Okay.
They had a lot of them there, too. Yeah, they growed them there.
Right.
And they had bananas, too. You never ate a banana yourself about that long. He ripened on a tree, but you had to watch for the poison spiders.
Whoa.
Yeah, they'd bite you.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And then we had centipedes, too. They just sting with their tail. They would get in the gun shells. The shell was about that long, and then they had the shell in the end that had the powder, 7 charges of powder in that shell behind. But it had its primer in the shell, in the brass shell, you know, behind. And right. The shell lid in front. You'd always reject the cartridge that is in. It had 7 charges in there, and that was all brass. And then centipedes would get in there, you had to watch. They'd get your hands or your legs every time.
Whoa.
The shell was about that long, and then the casing. And the powder was always in the casing, and the primer was in there, too. So you always had to get the right powder charger. You didn't know where the shell was going to light. You know, it had to be right.
Oh.
Yeah, you'd shoot 7 miles.
So 7 miles?
7 miles.
From your howitzer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good gracious.
With the full charge. Yeah, that's quite a ways. They was awful accurate. They were pretty accurate.
So when you were in one of these artillery things where you were firing so many shells a minute, they were already charged then, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. It depends on how far it goes, the powder charge. They'd always number the powder charge you put in. It had 7 in there.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And you left all them 7 in there, you'd shoot 7 mile. But when you cut it down, it wouldn't go as far.
Right.
It all depends on how you had the elevation. One time, I told them the elevation was too low, and they fired the lieutenant, and they fired the corporal both to give me, or the sergeant. I told them it was too low. It hit right in the middle of we didn't fire all day. It lit right in the center of the infantry.
Oh, no.
The elevation was too low. I told them it was.
Right.
I told them it was, you know.
Friendly fire.
Well, the shell didn't go out far enough. See, it didn't go beyond the infantry. See, we had to always just fire over the infantry.
Of course. Yeah, that's what your job was.
Yeah, it was sad. Well,
how many men were on the gun crew for each gun?
We had 16 guys, 2 crews. If they fired day and night, we had 1 fire in the daytime, 1 fire at night. We used to sleep right underneath the house, right underneath the gun. The gun had we always had a net up. We had an earthquake every day and a volcano every day when it erupted up on the mountains.
Really?
We're just 2 degrees off of the equator. So you know what the temperature was, and all white sand. You could dig down 3-4 feet and hit water.
Oh.
You'd hit ocean water.
What was the typical temperature?
Well, it'd run around 120 in the daytime, 100 at night.
How did you sleep?
And the moon, see, we were south of the international date line, so the moon and the sun went around to the north. It wasn't like here. You know, it goes around to the south, and that's where you always tell. You lost a day going over, and you gained a day coming back.
Right.
Yeah, international date line. You heard of that already.
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm coming back to your eight-man crew. What did each person do on that crew? Can you tell me what the crew members did? There must have been people who loaded the gun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you saw that picture there she had. Each one had their own position. Carry the gun, get the powder charge right, and they carry the gun, and you get the gun out. They come in cases. They come in big cases, maybe 4 or 5 shells in a case. And that's what I was telling about the centipedes. We had to watch for them. And you had to get all the ammunition and everything ready. It had to be ready to go in the gun, you know, right away.
And so that was the job of the loaders?
Yeah. They had a corporal and a sergeant, and I was number one man, and then number two man, 3 and 4 and 5, 6. There was 8 guys all together
right.
on the crew. That was the whole crew. We had 2 crews.
Right.
You know.
But layperson like me, that sounds like a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
How did you avoid getting in each other's way?
That was 16 guys, see.
Yeah, how did you avoid getting in each other's way when you were firing the gun?
Well, they had to stand back.
Okay.
Well, they just had one crew at a time, see.
Right.
The other crew, they'd stay
back.
That's
still 8 men.
But, yeah, if they lost too much sleep, they wouldn't work too good.
I see.
You know, you had to get your sleep a little.
Right.
We had one guy one night. He woke up. I guess he kind of went off up here, and he had a semi-automatic. He emptied that whole thing right out through his mosquito bar. We had that dug down that deep in the soil, you know, in the sand, and the bunks all set down in there all the way around, about 8 guys in a tent. All the way around. He got up one night, you know, and he picked up his gun. He said he heard something out there, and he emptied that whole damn gun right out there through the brush. So they had to take that away from him.
Oh, God.
Running automatic, you know. The Japs would tie themselves. They'd always try to get you when you went to chow. They'd tie themselves up in a tree. You'd never know you had him dead or not.
Right.
You could empty a whole gun out, and he'd still be up there. He tied himself up there.
Right.
Yeah. He'd always try to get you when you went to chow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was your unit ever fired on by a sniper when you were going to town?
Well, they had a gun. The Japanese had a gun. They must tuck it up in the mountains. He'd try to get the ships come in to supply, see, and he had it on tracks. Great big gun. I think it'd more than 155 yet.
Wow.
And they just couldn't get him. He had it on tracks, and he'd roll that gun out on them tracks and raid it back out, and he'd par on the ships that come in the harbor. And one day, I and the sergeant, we was in the foxhole. He said, "Do you think they're going to get him?" That's where the shell. I said, "As long as you can hear that, it ain't going to get you." I said, "The one you don't hear is going to get you." And one night he was out and he fired, and this airplane was up there. And by gosh, he saw the fire flash, and boy, he went over and he dropped a torpedo in on him. He blew him out of the sky high, gun, yep. Japanese, and all over thing. He never fired no more.
Wow.
They finally got him. Then Worst Machine Charlie, he used to come over. He'd come over about time you wanted bed down. He knew right where he was. He'd come over. He's so high that I think they had 40 or 50 millimeters. It took a 90 millimeter to reach him. They couldn't reach him. He was too high. So one night he was up there, and the night fighter was up there.
Oh.
Same time. He'd wait till he got off of the island. He heard him coming, and he blowed him through the sky. The bombs and the plane never blowed up. He never come over no more.
Not if he was blown
up.
And
he blowed him clear out of the sky. The night fighter got him.
Why was he called Worst?
He shot him down, you know.
Why was he called Washing Machine Charlie?
Worst Machine Charlie, he'd always come over about the time he went to sleep, about 10:30 at night, every night.
A very distinctive.
He was always on time, and he'd always after the airport. He was always after the airport because he had these big mats laid down, you know, so the airplanes wouldn't go down the sand. Well, he'd just tear them to pieces. He'd drop a 500-pound bomb down there, and they'd just tear them all to pieces.
Oh, yeah.
So the planes couldn't fly, you know.
So they had to fix them the next day.
They had to fix them all up the next day, and they had colored guys go out there in that heat. That's about the only guys that stand it. And they'd lay new mats down, and then the planes are ready to go. Then they go back and bomb Bougainville. Yeah, they go back and bomb them.
Getting that island ready for your attack, yes.
He'd do that every... He'd come in every night. One night we was there, we just about ready to fire, got four order, and we was all ready to go, and he was coming over, and we was all run for the hole, you know, to go in, you know, shelter, you know, bomb shelter. And one guy hollered, "Snake." Them guys come out of there quicker than they went in. He was just kidding him, you know, so he'd have room to stand.
Oh, no. That's not fair. Sand.
No, he hollered snake. Yeah. No, they had all kind of tricks that way. And that was about the end of it. That was a long time ago. A lot of times you can't remember just the exact day the date it happened, you know, and everything. But it was always mostly the month. But we waited at least 5 and 6 months on the guns and rifles. We had these little carbines. They wasn't as big as a big gun.
Right.
They held about 32 rounds with the clip. Right. They was a little short gun. You could fire them with one hand. They call them little carbines. Right. They fired a 30 millimeter shell. The Japanese, they had a 25 millimeter. When it hit you, it'd explode. It'd just tear you all pieces. You didn't live if they hit you with it. They had a shell. It was a 25 millimeter. When it hit you, it'd explode. And it'd just tear you up, you know. And then most all the officers that carried that 45, you know, the pistol 45, they carried them. Yep. That carried a big shell, too.
But the infantrymen had the Garand?
The infantry, they had the Browning automatics.
Oh, they did?
Brownings, yeah.
What about the M1?
Yeah, the M1s. Uh-huh. That's what they had. Then they got all new rifles, too. They was more automatic than the old ones was. First, we had the World War II.
Oh, the Springfield? Right?
Yeah, Springfield. Yeah, they was a kicking gun, though. The ammunition is 30 millimeter, 30. It's a pointed shell.
Right.
But they had tracer bullets for that, too.
Right.
When they fired, you know, they would fire out, burn out.
Try to be able to spot
one. One B-17 come in, the one like my wife worked on. They come in one day, it had holes in it that big around, and the co-pilot and the pilot was dead, and the radio operator brought it in. He brought it in on one motor. It never flew again. It had holes blowed into it. You could walk through the thing. The whole fuselage pinner was blowed off. The back end.
Was this on Guadalcanal?
Yeah, Guadalcanal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, B-17. It was a rough bomber. Yeah, they take a lot.
It could survive. Yeah, it could survive.
And the B-24s now, they weren't quite as fast and couldn't carry quite a bigger load as the B-17. The B-17 was a little faster and it carried a bigger load. They used a lot of them in Germany.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they used a lot of them.
So the planes were flying out of Guadalcanal
They'd go out on raids every day. Every day they'd go out. Fighters would always follow the bombers, you know, to keep the Zeros away. That Zero had a 1,000-horsepower motor in it. One time he ran out of fuel and he landed on the beach and they got it. They went through the whole plane. Didn't hurt it hardly at all. He landed right on the beach, right on the water, and they got the whole, it had a 1,000-horsepower motor in there. It didn't have no armor plate around the pilot at all. One bullet hit the gas tank, knocked it down. But it could outfly anything we had, but it couldn't come out of a dive.
Huh.
No way. But it could outrun anything we had.
Yeah.
It had a 1,000-horsepower motor in there.
Until later in the war, we began to get some better planes.
They was good. They were some good flyers. Yeah, they was good.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today?
Well,
it's been fascinating.
That was just about it. I had the best food, though, when I was with the Navy. They fed good. Of course, they always had a supply ship, too. And the Navy had that hospital ship there. It only come in so close to the firing line. It come New Hebrides. That was about 400 or 500 miles. I rode in a B-47. We went way high. We had to go up 8,000 feet. We run into a storm. It was about 600-700 miles from Guadalcanal. And there, I went to a Navy base there. They had a big Navy base there. But the Japs never fought on that island. That was so small.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave you good medical service in the Navy.
They did. The Navy weighed on me good. Yeah, they was real
That's
good.
Nice.
Yeah, they always had a lot of help.
I didn't realize that the services sort of combined. So Army troops were being helped by the Navy medical.
Yeah, well, they always had the CBs. You know, they'd always come in too.
Sure.
The Navy.
Rebuild the runways.
They'd repair the ships and stuff like that if they needed it. And they had welders, you know, and stuff like that. Then we got a big generator when we was on Fiji. It lit up the whole camp. I took care of it. I'd put gas in it, you know, and take care of it.
Right.
It was a big generator.
And while you were waiting to go back to your unit.
We had lights. The lights would go out about 10 o'clock every night. I remember one night, it was there for Christmas and New Year, all them ships in the harbor, they cut loose with their big air horns.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because we'd firm enough away from action. And then after I left, I don't know how long it was, they went to the Philippines, over half of the Mercal Division got killed. This sergeant here that she's got a picture of that I went down to St. Louis to see, he was there. He said the Japs come right to the infantry. He said it was bad. They wanted to keep the Malans. That was in the Philippines. I don't know how long they stayed there. They was there quite
this
a while.
This was your unit, yeah.
I'd left the outfit
yeah,
then.
Yeah, you were back.
Yeah, I was back home when I was coming home. Yeah, that'd been a long time ago.
I'll say. Well, thank you. Uh-huh. Is there anything else?
Yeah.
You've done a good job of telling us a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have
kind of like that life history?
Very much so. Yes, it's been fascinating.
I'd
like to give you one more chance if there's anything else you want to reminisce about.
I guess not. Okay. The ship I came home on, it was a Liberty ship. We didn't zig and zag from Guadalcanal. We come straight home. We come straight to the Panama Canal.
By then it was safe enough to do that.
All the way through. It didn't take us long. It took us a month ago, but I don't think it took us over 2 weeks to come back. It's about 13,000 miles from here to Australia. Yeah, from New York, where they went.
Right.
A long time.
It is a long trip.
Yeah. But we ran into that storm that time. I was on a ship, had 5,000. I forget the name of it, John Herring or something. But it didn't take nothing over the bow. But it drawed about 30, 40 feet of water, and it stood out of the water that high. You take 5,000 guys on there, that's a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And we had these bunks. They had this canvas, and they had pipes up, and they had this canvas tied to them pipes, and that holes through them pipes to hold them in position. I was in the bottom bunk, and they had them five high.
Five?
Every time the guy'd go up, he'd step in my face or step on my hand.
So
we had two meals a day. We had breakfast about 10 o'clock, and then a dinner and supper about 4. And somebody would holler, bah, you know, like sheep. They have a lot of mutton over there, you know, in Australia. Nobody would eat. And then they had some chicken there, too. Everything was dehydrated, like your potatoes and your eggs and everything like that. The reason why I drank a little coffee, because I sterilized the water. You see, the water was pretty foul.
Okay.
And that's why I got hepatitis.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
So often always, you had five people sleeping at the same time in those tiers?
Yeah, right straight up.
Oh, my gosh.
But when you got in rough water, that top guy, he got pretty rocky up there. And then they had these lead pipes on the ship, you know, and they started to break, and they started water all over the floor.
Oh, no.
Now they had to mend them back, and they had a hard time doing that. Then we got out of the storm while it was all right. Everything quietened up, you know. It quietened, everything settled down.
Now, these ships were manned by Navy?
They had waves 20 and 30 feet. They go way down. You know, if you didn't hit that ship head on, it just shake the daylight,
right,
or it'd roll it over.
Right.
So you had to hit it head on. But when it went in there, it just like going into a wall. It just jerked like that. Them waves were that strong. They were 30 and 40 feet high. You go down the ship, it'd go clear down in there, and you couldn't see it. Pretty soon, you'd come up. You'd come up on top of the wave, and you'd be riding high again. And that storm would last quite a while. They call them like typhoons,
right?
You know. There was one just hit the Solomon Islands here about a month ago. It wiped the whole island out, killed all the people on it, and everything. It washed out. It never came out of water. It just stayed down.
Oh.
Some islands come up and some go down. But I don't know how the ships miss them all. They stay down. But you see water for 30 days and 30 nights. You're out there a long time.
Especially when you're from the Midwest and haven't seen it before, yes.
I weighed 20 pounds. I lost 20 pounds on the way over. Of course, I didn't eat much because I got seasick so bad.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't keep nothing down there.
Yeah.
No, you can't keep nothing
down. I wonder you need a time to train.
Sometimes you get the runs, too. You know, you get the scars because the food don't digest with you. But that old ship just rocks all the time. Like, it don't only rock so much, but it rolls. It'll roll like that and then up and down like this, see, when it hits them big waves. Yeah. But
so
you can always tell when you're getting close to land, you'll see the seagulls and stuff coming out,
right,
and you'll see them porpoises going like this. They'll follow.
Good sign.
Yeah, that's a sign you're closer to
land. So it took
land.
Most of you quite a while to recover when you got to Australia because you lost so much.
You was run down. You never had the right kind of food to eat, see?
Yeah, and you had to eat exercise.
But we got to Australia, though. They fed us good over there.
Okay.
Yeah, they fed us good.
Well, when you were 18, I bet you never suspected you'd be in Australia when you were 22.
No.
That was quite something.
I hit 22, let's see. I was in just about a year. I went in March the 31st, and then I was 22 in September, that September. And then we was headed for overseas that fall.
I mean,
that winter. I'll never forget when we went over, they left us off at the Indian Town Gap, and we got off the train from Camp Forest, Tennessee. They stopped off there for a little rest. They just loaded us up in cattle cars. You know what you haul cattle in?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they loaded us up in. And
what?
Then they took us to this New York.
Oh, my golly.
Yeah, we didn't load back up on the train no more.
Oh, gosh.
They just loaded us all up and stood up. You had little ropes to hang on like that and semi-cattle truck.
What?
Yeah. Yeah,
how long a train was that?
Yeah, we didn't load up back up on the train again.
How long a trip was that?
It wasn't about a day.
Holy cow.
Yeah, Indiantown Gap. See, you're getting pretty close to New York.
Okay, but still, that's a long time to hold a strap.
Yeah, they just hold us in semi-trailers.
Right.
They come, the train got us in them too. We stayed overnight there in camp. That's about all. We're moving all the time.
Well, this has been a fascinating story.
Yeah.
You're representative of your generation, the individuals who were living in.
It's something to live through all that.
I'll say.
Most all the guys my age now, they're dead. Yeah. I imagine that sergeant, he's died now too. The other one died. He was born in Kentucky. He lived at Trenton, Illinois. He just died last year.
These were part of your crew.
He's in my gun crew. Okay. He's in my gun crew. And then the sergeant was too.
Right.
He lived down at Belleville.
The crew leader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Albert. This has been, I'm glad you could come and give us your experiences.
The only thing bothered me yet, since I had malaria, it left my stomach a little weak, and then I had hepatitis. I was about 24 years old, I guess, and I got discharged. I never even went out with a girl for a whole year.
Oh.
I couldn't get out of bed, something like hepatitis. It works on your liver and your spleen. You know, it swells
and fatigue,
up.
Too.
You couldn't take a drink of beer. You could take a drink of beer, it'd all come back up.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, it's very fatiguing.
Hardly any people come out of that, you know what? It stays with you. You know, that singer one time got it on TV. The judges.
Oh.
You know,
Okay.
The mother got it, and she couldn't even sing.
Well, you or your wife were telling me there was a moment where there was a telegram to your family back home about how ill you were. Hmm? Your family got a telegram saying how ill you were.
When I come back from New Zealand, I got an awful attack of malaria again. And I'm just yellow as gold. And that nurse that took care of me, she took that to mom and bounced, she jerked that out. And that's why I went out one day at noon, didn't come back till the next day.
You were knocked out?
I mean, you know, just got another attack of malaria.
Unconscious.
I just went out. I think I had a little yellow jaundice too, because that's what they call. You was all yellow. Everything was yellow but your teeth.
Right.
Yeah.
The hepatitis makes you orange and yellow, too.
Yeah, I was pretty weak. I mean, I was still run down yet from the operation, see. Right. I mean, I hadn't come out of that too good yet. And I wouldn't.
But I was just saying that your family got a telegram about how ill you were.
Yeah,
they were probably very worried.
This nurse, she was from Rhode Island. I call her Rhode Island Red. She'd come by every Sunday, pick me up, make me sing in the choir to go to church.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I knew quite a lot of songs. She'd come by and pick me up. He says, "I'll take good care of you."
Do you want to, as a final note, do you want to tell us about what your grandfather gave you? You were telling me about what your grandfather gave you,
or
your
my rosary I got, I was, I was still on Guadalcanal yet. I was still in service, and it come in an envelope, and that cross was hanging out, and I lost the crucifix off the end of it. I lost the crucifix. And that's 65 years old. I think that's what brought me back from the South Pacific. I'd say it every day. And a lot of guys, he says, "I'm an older boy." He says, "I may go to hell, but," he says, "I ain't going to go to church no more."
Oh.
He was Polish. And, I says, "I'm going to go." And then I went, and the shrapnel was coming right to the top of the tent, and I was
the
only one.
At the Catholic service?
I was the only one there. I was the only one out of 240,
you and the priest?
240 guys. I was the only one. I went on Sunday. And I had my rosary with me. But I got down underneath this. I think I had an old board or something, or a piece of coconut limb or something I got down there. But that shrapnel was coming right to the top of the tent, making holes.
Where they were holding the service.
And that's there. They're 65 years old. And that crucifix there come from John Pope Paul, Paul II, Pope John. My priest from Loden and Paxton, he was down to St. Louis, and he gave that back to me. He gave that to me when he come back. He saw the Pope.
Oh.
Yeah, he saw the Pope.
So it had been blessed after,
Yeah, it's been blessed.
It had been part of your faith while you were in the service.
53 Hail Marys and 5 Glory Bees and 5 Our Fathers in that. And he got said.
Okay.
And good luck for him.
Well, thank you.
I always keep that with me.
Thank you very much. Is there anything else
Henry? Where's the little lady was in here?
I'm not sure if she's.
You think she's here yet?
No, she's gone to her office. She'll be back.
I see. I want to give her four-leaf clover.
Oh, that's right. Well, I think we're done then.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That program is in danger of being closed, unfortunately.
I'm looking at my state of Illinois.
jamboree, and they'd peel that porch light. They had somebody, a guy sang, you know, and called.
They've done a good job.
And then they have a string band, too. That's nice, too. And Ozzy, he's a good caller, string band. We used to go clear over to Covington, Indiana. We used to go clear down the Covered Bridge,
yeah,
Covered Mile. State Fair, up on top of the building, way up on top.
We
go
there. We danced on top of there one night.
Yeah.
That was
when we younger. We'd go clear to Peoria. Have you ever been over the riverboat and gambled a little bit?
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah, we've been there.
Mm. Now, was this square dancing or regular
dancing?
Yeah,
we went to the tour where they danced.
Yeah.
We had dinner and danced on the boat.
Yeah.
Just
down
the Mississippi and back.
I think about the forest we ever went is where Springfield was in a way.
Well, we down to Rock the
Rock, yeah, 100 miles. Yeah, we've been down there.
We've been to Peoria.
Yeah, we've been down to Effingham. We got down
Kia
there.
Rock.
Mm-hmm. We got to Effingham. We got all over. We were a little late in starting, heck. I was 50 years old.
52, 52.
Huh? 52 years.
Took me 2 years to talk into it.